Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You don't need to become Rebecca Yarros. You don't need to become Sarah J. Maas. You don't need to become Brandon Sanderson.
Everyone says things are more competitive than ever. That's true. But you can also do more work for yourself than ever.
You write more than you think you need to. Write all the fucking time. Break up with your girlfriend.
That could be. Welcome back, everybody, to another Two to Ramble episode. I am one of your hosts, Austin.
And I'm your other host, Richard.
Today, we are talking about having two very different paths in publishing. And we have two very special guests today. Not just Rich and I, but we have one guest here, Evan Likem, who I have followed for the longest of time now. He has a great TikTok page, Instagram page, and now is becoming a traditionally published author. His first book, Anji Kills a King, will be out next summer. And he was signed on with Tor, a trilogy. Evan, we're going to pick your brain a bunch today. Welcome onto the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Absolutely.
And we also have the big daddy of BookTube, Daniel Green, on here.
Whoa!
There's the big daddy.
Yo, he's starting a different path. He started off with indie publishing and is now transitioning, successfully going to traditional publishing. So we're going to see why he's going that path, go a little deeper, and we're going to have fun seeing how these paths cross and why they even decided to do this. Thank you.
Yes,
thank you for coming.
It'll
on.
Be a great time. I'm very excited. And I'm a big fan of you guys. I just want to put that out
totally.
There.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely.
Was recommended your shorts, which your shorts game is fantastic. And then I just did like a 3 or 4 year episodes in like one day. And I was like, whoa. Oh, I hope they reach wow. out. And then happy.
That's so great. And were we just too small for you not to reach out to us? Like you could have came to us, you know? Like what is wrong with you?
I'm incredibly socially uncomfortable and awkward. That's the problem.
Totally understandable. Okay.
No, we reached out to you like what? Close over a year ago
and no,
we sent
not that
you
long.
We
no.
sent no, we sent him our bookshelf.
Oh,
for
yeah,
his bookshelf
yeah.
roast,
oh, I did that
and
too,
we were in a
he,
thumbnail.
He ghosted me.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh no, but did I roast your shelf?
We were
well,
your thumbnail.
You said yeah. you said it, these yeah. words, man, that's a great shelf for a podcast. And then yeah.
Yep. It all comes full circle.
Wait, that didn't you guys were already doing it though by then, right?
Yes. Mm. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I was about to say if I accidentally spawned this, I need to get one royalties. And,
speaking of royalties, what do you guys make? No. No. But I guess a good point to start off with this is so the breaking news, Daniel, you got an agent now. That is awesome. Yes. And mm-hmm. Evan, it's not breaking news for you that you have the Tor deal, three books signed on with Tor. Let's start with there. Let's start Evan and that whole deal, that process of, did you initially go straight to traditionally published? Did you toy around with indie at all? What was the decision that you made going forward with that?
Yeah, I went for a traditional publish right away. So I was in a live stream in like 2021 and, Seth Fishman, my agent, and now Daniel's agent, just happened to be in there, and he plucked me right out of it, and he hit me up and said, hey, do you have anything that you can send me, you know? And I was like, oh my god, yes, absolutely. And I sent him something, and he was just like, nope, this is awful, I don't want to, no. And then I just didn't yeah, it was, it kind of crushed me for a little bit, but then I took some time, worked on some other stuff. And then like, I don't know, like a year and a half later or something, I hit him back with a much more heavily revised version of what I had sent him. And he was like, oh, hell yeah, this is great. And then he, you know, wanted the rest of it. I hadn't finished the rest of it. So I had to like crank it all out in like less than a week or like 2 weeks or something like that. And, by the skin of my teeth, you know, he was like, yeah, okay, I'll take you on, you know, like you seem fine at this, so we'll give it a shot. And then yeah, he shopped me around to a bunch of different publishers, and after one rejection, we got Tor was interested, and then shortly after that HarperCollins was interested. So I talked to both Tor and HarperCollins, and wow, ended up going with Tor. I mean, HarperCollins is a fantastic publisher. There wasn't any like, you know, specific reason I didn't go with them, but Tor was just fucking Tor. Mm. So I wanted to go with them, and but yeah, it's been great. So they offered me a 3-book deal. It's just a North American deal, so we're still looking for UK and EU
if you're listening publishers. You know, mm-hmm. You're up, give them a call.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah, up, there you go.
Yeah.
we're in that process right now, but the pre-order should come up soon. The cover should be out soon. I'm really excited about the cover. I can't wait to show everybody. And yeah, it's really great. I mean, I had written a couple books before that, like kind of got to the end of them and was tinkering around with different stories and stuff, but I've been writing since I was in like my mid-20s, and yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm starting to get, I don't know, some kind of handle on it, but it is quite the beast to try to tame. I think it's going to take my whole life, but it's very exciting. It's a major, major change to my life. I found out about this deal. My agent called me while I was working in a dish pit at a sushi restaurant. And I really like romanticizing that. Like I really, really do, because if you're out there and you're working in a restaurant and you're trying to make your dreams come true, they can fucking come true. Like I promise you, they really can. Like they, like, just keep working your ass off. You know, like it was very much like I was very broke. I was trying to do like content creation full time. It wasn't really working out. Had to get a job at a restaurant. My Patreon was helping me limp through my rent payments and stuff. It was pretty brutal. And now I have much more time to write and much more time to create and stuff, which is very, very graceful of Tor to help me out there. And hopefully I can earn out, and they want to keep working with me and stuff. But right now I'm working on book two. I just turned in book one, Angie Kills a King. Book two is tentatively called Angie in Shadow, and book three is going to be called Angie Kills a God.
Ooh.
And so, yeah.
Always great to add kills a God in a title. It always...
With Angie Kills a King, not to spoil anything, but that happens in the book.
It does.
It's in the very first sentence of the book. She murders a king.
Spoiler warning, so, man. God damn.
Darn. Page one spoilers.
First sentence spoilers. But I really liked it. You know, it's like if you're at a bookstore, you know, you open it up. It's like there's a title. There's a cover. Angie Kills a King. Oh, there she is doing that. You know, he already delivered on one thing. So, yeah, I'm super excited about it. I'm also working on some a horror novel right now, which I would love to have published through Tor Nightfire. And I'm also working on some short stories stuff and just kind of always... Oh, and a novella, and just like picking at stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's a huge change to my life, and my life has gotten so much cooler and so much more exciting since all that went down. It's really, really amazing. I'm like grateful as fuck for it. Like every single day, I just like sit and think about how awesome it is.
I mean, that's a lot of booktubers' dream is to just one. We love stories. Eventually, hey, maybe I'll become good enough to write and then publish stories of my own through trial and error. And Daniel, that's where you started as booktubers, like little old us here. And then throughout the years of reading stories, where did your writing passion start? And then why did you have a different pathway where you started indie and now we're looking and toying with traditional publishing now?
Well, I also just want to say the biggest takeaway, in my opinion, Evan, the dishwasher thing, love that. Great branding. Let's go with it. But the thing, I know it's amazing, but I also want to say from your story, like, I love that you have that element too, where you submitted it, got a rejection, polished it, resubmitted it. A lot of people, when they get one no, they fall down, they don't get up. You got to be willing to, I mean, if you're going to make it as an author, you're going to be told no a million times. Or you can self-pub, and that's where
what a segue.
No, I originally decided to self-pub my book just because, honestly, I was wanting to do a novella, and I knew almost no trad publisher would snatch you up. for a novella first thing, and even with a platform. But I also, from very early on, knew I wanted to kind of try all three methods so that I could make content about all three methods. I wanted to be able to not just be one of these people who gives writing advice who hasn't done it. And so the self-pub just started there. It was like, well, if I start here, it doesn't really make sense to go the other way. So, because usually if you start in trad, you sign a deal and then they find out you have something else you want to put out, they'll just offer you more money. And I think like a lot of people, I'm bad at saying no to money. And the first book, I made a lot of mistakes, but I think that was part of the promise of it, right? You know, it was just, let's see what you can do starting from zero, like so many people who want to just write books do. And learn in the process. The biggest spelling, or not spelling, typo of my career is still in book one, where the last name of the main two characters is inconsistent because I did not do replace all right.
No.
So that is the level of mistake you no. can make. And then I ended up putting out a sequel to that, just trying to showing like I can improve a little bit here and there. And that was when I met up with Wraithmark Creative and met Bryce. And it's funny, I met Bryce O'Connor because I gave him a negative review. And then he reached out to me and was like, I like you. And I was like, I like you too. And then we started working together. And it's been just awesome seeing the more cutting edge side of what's going on in new kinds of publishing. That's what Wraithmark does, you know, whether it's deluxe editions or just publishing existing authors or first time, like so many others. It's incredible seeing learning how much I have, and also giving an interesting window into how much smaller publishers are able to just run circles around the bigger guys in some ways because of how slow the bigger publishers, the trad ones that Evan sold his soul to, are to adapt. I say hoping they sign me. And so yeah, it's just been amazing. And it's something like you put it perfectly. As a kid, all I wanted to do was write books. I remember doing it in my agenda in the back of note pages in physics class and like middle school. And now I'm actually learning to do it well. And it's the greatest part of my life, aside from the woman playing video games right next to me.
Your middle school had physics classes?
Oh, that's also a good point.
No, I said that I knew it was wrong. It was actually a biology class, and I know that now because I did it next to a toad.
Yeah, I learned phrases in like 11th grade. That would have been like a very advanced middle school.
Yeah.
You're right. But Rich, we could relate to that point where you made fun of but had a review on the Wraithmark owner. Or Rich, mm-hmm. when we had Nicholas Eames, that yeah. whole aspect of it.
Our thumbnail for the video was "it's mid" when we talked about for his book Kings of the Wild. I liked the book. Austin liked it less than me and said it's mid.
It was fine.
And he messaged us, said like, hey, love the video, would love to come on. It's like, sure.
That's so cool.
Which I'm sorry, because I know Evan isn't your book in the capture of that little the blurb you kind of have. Hey, it's Kings of the Wild meets etc. So yours is, does it have aspects of that?
No, I mean, like, it is, it's like an A to B story, like Kings of the Wild is.
Yeah,
but it's not as it's darker, like it's a lot darker than Kings of the Wild.
Okay.
Less
but yeah
jokes.
I didn't write the blurb or anything, but I would say like, yeah, I mean, it's similar to Kings of the Wild in the sense that like you're kind of getting to know this world and these characters while they're, you know, they're busy trying to get somewhere or trying to not get somewhere.
Quick pause from this episode.
We know this video is going to do well because it has Daniel Green and Evan in it, so we're going to promote our stuff.
Yeah.
Go check out our Patreon, where we have a Discord exclusive book club. It's a ton of fun, great community. We also got merch, things, and bookmarks. It's fun. Support us. Give us money.
All right, we'll let you get back to the episode. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Evan, you were talking about how before you were able to get signed on, you wrote a book, it was turned down, and you kind of had to go through the process of writing several things before finally getting picked up. Daniel, with your first novella, Breach of Peace, did you have anything else written before you decided to publish Breach of Peace? And anything you wrote like almost to completion and had to scrap? Or was that like the first thing you wrote? Written to the
You're
completion.
Bringing back bad memories, my friend, because there are so many books I started, got lost in, you know, scrapped. Breach of Peace was like an amalgamation of like four different stories that I had been thinking about since I was in middle school, sketching stuff out. And so it the third book in it, it's funny. I want to do self-pub, I want to do hybrid, and I'm about to try and do trad because I've done the first two. And for my first series, I want to do a novella, a novel, and then like an epic, you know, one of those Stormlight Archive size things. Because I just hadn't really seen a series do that, you know, where you can kind of like lie to people and be like, look how easy the first book is. And then by the third one, it's like the middle finger.
Kind of like All Systems or Murderbot does that a little bit, right? A lot of novellas that bang, novel.
Even the novel's so small, though. It's not a big book.
That's fair.
Yeah. But it's a normal sized novel. Like, true. Mystery book, kind of.
Yeah. And so the third one, I'm spending a lot of time between the second book and the third book writing it because I really want to practice. I want to get better and better because I know a book that size, that commitment, I need to do the Rocky montage, but on a typewriter. And so that's been on hold while I've tried to do my hybrid series, which is I want to do something where I didn't try to do something super technical. I just went, what do I like? What do I want to see on the page? So I wrote a cyberpunk vampire Buffy-ish story with a lot of Blade elements. And it was just like, I love schlocky action movies. Let's make that into a book. And it turned out to be about terrorism a lot more than I thought it would be. But I love that book. Yeah. And my trad attempt, the one I'm going for, is a survivalist epic horror fantasy taking place on an island. Because I also love horror, from Freddy Krueger to everything else.
You mentioned in when you were announcing this that you're going to start going trad that you kind of gravitated more. Yeah, you love the indie stuff. You actually made more money relatively. There's a lot of money to be made in the indie space and trad if it's successful as well. But you, one of the reasons you said that you were going trad was it has more of prestige, the awards. There's this aura around trad in a sense. Do you have that to say, or is that a big reason why you're inclined to go that direction?
I mean, yeah, of course. I mean, I say it's for the channel and content, which it is. Like, that's a very deliberate decision. But at the same time, like, yeah, I'd also love to be able to go to my dad and say, like, I'm going to be published by one of the big five. Like, that would be something that would be just, you know, holy crap. The same people who took interest in someone like Robert Jordan's or Jim Butcher's book bothered to pay attention to mine. There's just kind of that. I mean, as much as I love to criticize trad publishing, I criticize it because I love what they do. Like, I am the biggest fan of their content. And so I want them to catch up. I want them to, you know, change their marketing. I want them to compensate their authors, but different and better. But all of that comes from a place of just in general thinking that they are part of a process that creates some of the best art there is to experience.
Well, Evan, was that part of your decision? Because when you were looking to publish, you did have a social media presence. Were you considering indie publishing? And decided to go for traditional publishing? Was part of it the prestige? Is it the money? What was kind of your reason to put aside indie publishing and go more for traditional?
I think indie publishing was definitely an option for me, and it was something that I had considered. I didn't see any, you know, anything inherently bad or wrong with it or anything, but when the opportunity came knocking to be published just in general, traditionally, and then especially to be published by Tor, I wasn't going to leave that. And I doubt most authors would, unless they'd already had a bunch of success with indie publishing. I think that for me, traditional publishing, there is a certain prestige to it for sure. I won't lie about that. I also think that, you know, like writing, it's a very like lonely process, and it's like a very intense process. But having Tor and especially my editor Stephanie Stein, my agent, the kind of like assistant editor Sana, who works at Tor as well, it's just like I'm getting input on things, I'm getting eyes on things from like industry professionals, you know. It's like if I had written 12 songs and recorded them in my basement and it was good recording, you know, I could put it out. But then Sony BMI was like, hey, we have like this whole big giant studio you can like re-record all the songs in and, you know, really polish them up. It really just depends on like so many different variables, right? But like for me personally, it was like, okay, cool. Like these people are willing to give me a chunk of money. So that's awesome. You know, like I can get that first before having to like deal with all the, you know, like self-publishing isn't free. Like you can't just like throw your books up on the internet. Like it costs money, and you still are collaborating with people. You're collaborating with editors, cover designers, artists, things like that. So that's not a wholly independent venture either. But with Tor, it's the opportunity to work with people who have done this for years in the echelon that they do it in. You know, I mean, like, they win award after award after award, and it's because they're the best. Like, they're like the, I mean, Tor has the best editors. Like, I think like most publishers would be like, oh yeah, Tor's got amazing editors.
I was gonna say just on that, where the resources you can get with traditionally published, where even talking right. in the sense of, I don't know if we mentioned this, but Evan, your channel, your book reviews kills is what you go on and your Instagram page mm-hmm. and et cetera. So if everybody wants to find Evan, links for description down below for everything. And wanted to bring that up because a lot of people watching right now, I mean, Daniel Green, Evan, you both have hundreds of thousands of followers on social media. We have tens, but you know, we're working our way there. We're going to, the next step, okay? So, but for the people watching right now that, you know, they're coming in and they're writing no social media presence, where indie publishing is obviously very accessible to where mm-hmm. for you both, and you had different capabilities just like we would, just like anybody with some presence would have a little bit more networking or being able to get agents and have that access. So for anybody watching right now that wants to go traditional but doesn't have a following, would you guys have advice for, hey, here's a way to go about it if you're just starting from zero and you have a book that you love and you're writing?
If you don't mind, I'd love to run with that, because I actually have several friends who are not huge on social media. They're working on their epics and they're actually, it's funny, some of them are working on epics, some novellas, and you know, there's all kinds of different barriers depending on what you're creating. So if you're making a novella, you need to learn how to pitch a novella. If you're writing a 500,000 word, you know, massive thing, you also need to learn who's accepting that. Getting an agent is the first time you're going to get used to being told no a lot, because not a lot of agents are going to be saying yes to even a moderate percentage of what comes across their desk. But if you're willing to put in research, you can figure out which agents typically say yes to what kind of stories. And then you can actually put in the legwork to find out, okay, they're doing that. They're looking for that kind of story. And they found success looking at this age range. And that kind of actual research is a tool that isn't really available to authors in the past that you will have available to you now. Everyone says things are more competitive than ever. That's true. But you can also do more work for yourself than ever. And I think that's a really big part of getting ahead of the curve. You don't necessarily need a social media presence, but I would get good at looking into other people's social media past to find out, even just like, I know this guy from this tweet, he's an agent, likes Blade Runner. I'm going to mention that there are similarities to that movie in this, and my little blurb I'll send along with it. It's not stalking if it ends up making you $1 million.
They're gonna clip that so hard.
For the viewers, like, I don't, goodbye, I wish career. They knew what Evan said before this recording started. I won't say, but it was just it was so funny and unhinged, and just man, we could blackmail you to oblivion if we just had that on. It would be so nice.
Darn. Why don't we have like pre-roll? Like, darn. Oh,
well. Actually, that's something I started doing, not to freak out any authors, but I basically started hitting recording the second people land in, mm-hmm. and I don't stop it till they leave. And that's because sometimes just the best content you get is when they don't feel that pressure that they think they're live. And I will ask them, like, hey, after we went live, we had this long talk. Is it cool if I include that? And I've had, I think, both Pierce Brown and Steven Erickson. Parts of those interviews were after everything was stopped recording. And asked them, like, that was wonderful what you said there. Can you fold that in? And said, yeah. Sorry, that was, I want you guys to succeed. So that was advice, not for your viewers, but for you.
We will take that. We will secretly record people, Daniel. Thank you.
We'll look into proper software to,
yep.
You know, a recording that doesn't show that we're actually recording.
Yeah. Fantastic.
That's not what I meant. Like, right now, it's like, they're always, it says, like, you're being recorded.
They don't need to know that. No.
Hey, I already have the software. I could record the screen with OBS before I even click the record.
That's the next step. I mean, that's a whole nother thing with production on RMBs. Rich, when we're producing a show like this, it would be a lot easier if, hey, you went to a studio, any news station that, hey, you have all the equipment and you could do that. Just like where Evan was saying about Tor, they got the best editors. They have the access to give you indie publishing. Would you guys say that there's a significant difference with the not just the resources, but you putting in your work for whatever book that you're writing, and the end results, the editor, the production, like what goes into that that people don't realize if they're going to go indie publishing? How much effort is that going to take And I guess either of you can take this because Daniel, you have indie published book, but Evan, feel free to jump in.
So indie pub, it's all on you. And so you actually kind of have to become like someone who looks at essentially resumes. And so you need to actually, again, figure out like which editors are actually going to be worth your time, because there are ones that are really cheap that'll do a surprisingly great job because you are fortunate to find someone who just hasn't built up their career a lot yet. But a lot of the time you also need, if you want to find someone who's going to give you that near trad or trad experience, they're going to be charging more and they're going to know what they're worth. But the editor is a key part of the process. I've seen a lot of people in the indie space try and skip it. I get that your friends can look at a script and go like, oh, that was nice, but that's not going to hold up to an audience online that doesn't love you like your friend clearly does. And you need to have those editors, and you need to look into the different kinds of edits that come in. But that being said, it's not nearly as expensive as a lot of people would think to get done. I think I had my first book edited for just a few hundred dollars. It shows a bit. And then my second book, it was closer to about $1,000 or $1,500. But that's not, you know, if you're going to want to really try this, there's also other expenses like, sorry, I think Kayla just died in Overwatch. and so there's other expenses like having, an editor or cover drawn up, an artist. That's, you gotta, start saving. It's just, I think back then I was just kind of putting aside some of my Patreon money every month to get that stuff taken care of. And it's, I want to say, like, though, it's not, people hear that and they kind of get overwhelmed. I know it means interacting with people, and that's scary, and having conversations with editors, that's like really about something that your heart cares so much about. But it's not as bad as you think. And also, there are so many amazing people at it. Like, these people want you to succeed. Editors, they do their job because they love it. They love writing, and they want to give you that feedback that is invaluable. And learn to give your thing to more, your scripts to more beta readers and editors for that feedback. God, that's the best thing I can tell indie people, is just get other people to read your stuff anytime you can. Even your mom.
Yeah. I assume both of you had beta readers. Did you each have a group of friends that you did, and also more close people that you know, but you could trust their opinion? And how many beta readers did you have in the process for each of your books? And maybe it's different for you, Evan, because through Tor, I don't know if that, how's that work with getting a traditionally published book and beta readers? Do they provide some for you, or do you search those out on your own? How's that work exactly?
So Tor didn't really tell me like not to show it to anybody.
Yeah.
I don't think they've done that once, actually. Oh. So I sent my draft of Angie Kills the King that we had on submission with my agent to like 10 of my Patreon subs. That was just like a perk for them. If they wanted, if anybody volunteered, they could beta read. And for the next book too, if you're on Patreon, if you want to beta read, I'm cool with that too. I don't mind like a lot of people, because I mean, if you're subbed on Patreon, like you'll probably end up buying the book. So I mean, if you don't, like, that's cool too. But anyway, so I had showed that manuscript, but actually the only people that have read the final manuscript that I just turned in are my editor, the assistant editor, and my ex-girlfriend, and me like a million times. Like, I've read it so many times at this point. But I have had a lot of eyes on different drafts. So like, I think that the draft that I just turned in, that's like into copy edits, so I still have like one kind of glance at it before it's printed or whatever, but I think that was like my 13th or 14th draft or something like that, like total. Ooh. And my brother read like the draft in between the submission draft and the one I just sent off the copy editing, and he was stoked about it, which I was like really excited about, because he hates like everything. He's like the biggest contrarian in the world. Vaughn, if you're listening to this, I know you're going to disagree, but you're a contrarian, so you just disagree. He just doesn't like anything. But when he read it, he was like, all right, that was pretty good. And then I knew that, like, okay, maybe we have something cool in our hands here, because like, if Vaughn liked it, you know, because he has a bone to pick with, like, literally, we got out of Dune 2 and he was just like, oh, these are all the issues I had with it. It's just like, dude, can you shut up? Like, oh my God.
You post them on social media, don't you? I see.
Yeah, I make fun of Vaughn a lot.
I see a lot of stuff where you're just completely making fun of. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's also like Vaughn's kind of he's like a hi-fi, like a music nerd. And so he's actually turned me on to like dozens, scores of bands that I would have never listened to, because I was too, you know, high and mighty to listen to this indie band that he found randomly that has like 10,000 streams a month on Spotify. But then I'm like, oh my God, this is so amazing. So Vaughn, if you're listening, your good music taste, he just doesn't read. I make fun of him for it because he has like a bunch of books at his house, you know, for when people come over.
But the decorative books. Yeah.
He always gets like a third of the way through. But what was I talking about? Oh, yeah. So I had a decent amount of people read it. And at first, you know, when Seth was initially the first person that was like, this is not, no, you know, there's all these problems with it. This is, I think he said the first draft that I sent him, he said it was predictable. And I was like, oof, ow, like, damn, that's like the last thing I want it to be. Like, oh my gosh. He's like, I can just tell immediately what's going to happen and it's boring and predictable. I was like, thanks, man. Like, cool.
At least he's honest. Feedback, are you looking for that? A little sugar coating sometimes? Like, if you're honest with yourself, would you? No, you don't care?
I don't know, because like people's opinions about things, like I'd rather hear it, and even if I don't agree with it, like I don't have to agree with every bit of criticism I get. Like, I'm the one at the end of the day that gets to decide whether or not I want to change things. You know, even my editor Stephanie, who's like a professional senior editor at Tor, she's giving me suggestions on my manuscript, and I just delete her note and like just keep going. And I'm like, no, I know exactly how I want that to look, you know. There was like one specific part where I didn't use commas where I should have used commas in like dialogue. And she was like, I think you want to use commas here. And I was like, no, I don't actually. I want it to sound like it's all coming out in one breath. So it looks a little awkward, but like, I'd rather do that than use grammatically correct commas and then explain in a dialogue tag what I meant by that. You know what I mean? So it's just small stuff like that where like, yes, my editor is technically correct about this thing, but then I want it to be this way just because I, you know, there's some warts on it and they're my warts and I want to keep them on the book. I don't want it to come out like this, like clinical, like perfect thing where I listen to everybody and not to myself, you know, like
you want 80s Stephen King, not now Stephen King.
I mean, I don't know if I have the budget for I don't have the cocaine budget that Stephen King had, but yeah. So lots of people look at it. And I would recommend definitely, like, whether you're going trad or you're like you're looking for an agent, you're looking for an editor, you're just trying to self-pub, whatever you're trying to do, just get people to look at it. And I'm not telling you like you have to develop a thick skin or anything. Like, it's gonna hurt. I won't lie. Like, it does hurt a little bit when people are like, this didn't make sense. And you're like, how could it not make sense? You know, well, you thought of everything, you know. So yeah, it makes sense in your head, you know, when you're making it all up. But when other people are reading it for the very first time, they don't have the unwritten context that you do when you're writing it all down, because it's all in your brain. So they're like, well, wait, what side of the room is that door on? Like, when did they come in here? And you're like, well, they've been, obviously, you know, like they, but no, you gotta put that stuff down sometimes. And you just gotta kind of get over that. Like, it's not a reflection of your skill or your ability to write a cool book or anything like that. The process is really difficult. Like, thinking up blocking and thinking up continuity and character motivation and narrative symmetry and like all this stuff, like, you're spinning a bunch of plates. Like, it's totally okay for you to miss a mark every now and then. And, you know, like, you did forget that it was daytime at the beginning of this chapter and only like 20 minutes has gone by. There's no reason the moon should be in the sky, you know. Like, it's not that big of a deal, you know. Especially in even big plot points too, where like if there are big giant plot holes, you know, if somebody's like, well, I understand like why that happened, but why now are they deciding to do this? Like, what, couldn't they have just done this? And it's like, that's kind of a plot hole, and you kind of like fight with it for a little bit. But one thing I've learned over this whole process also is you can fix pretty much everything because you're making everything up, you know. Like, you can write your way out of a lot of holes. Just like, don't panic. And just like, if there's a really big problem, there's usually a nugget somewhere in the story that you're creating that you can kind of like connect another line to and be like, okay, maybe if we like refine that idea that I had over here, it'll kind of make this one make a little more sense. And we could just like not have that happen at all, you know? And like, so stay open to those kinds of things. And like, that's another thing, is like being open-minded to those criticisms while you're in a phase of actually crafting this thing, you know? Now, I don't know if I'll have that kind of like jolly demeanor when the reviews come out and everybody's like, wow.
You see the Tudor Ramble review, it's like mid, just like Nicholas Eames. Mid, and then you come on and yeah, it's a whole
substandard.
Substandard.
No, yeah. Predictable.
Just maybe, yeah, maybe. That's the, but I, you know, yeah, I'm doing the very best I can. I'm very proud of the work that I'm doing and the work that Tor is helping me do.
Well, we're talking, dancing around a lot of these subjects between traditional and indie published, and going to go right out and say, talk about the, basically the connotation or the stereotype that indie books are just not as good as traditional published. And that if the fact that you are indie published means you weren't good enough for traditional. That is a stereotype they've, you know, I think people have in their heads, especially if they haven't read too many indie books or they've only read one. What are your guys' thoughts to that stereotype?
Oh, I could make so many people mad.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.
Please, but I'm not going to. No.
Come on. Wow. Come on. Give us your thoughts, Daniel.
Well, what I will say is indie does have no filter, right? There is a filter for trad. There's not one for indie. I think that's just objectively true because you can just put something on the internet and you technically just indie published it, done. So there is a, I would say, more frequent occurrence of people who do not know how to find the diamonds in the rough, finding rough, than you do in the trad space. Trad has a lot more established avenues to get reviews and word of mouth around their stuff to, you know, if something's hot, it becomes super hot and becomes big and famous. Whereas indie has had to kind of rely on more word of mouth or just social media hype to find the things that deserve a lot of love and attention. I have so much respect for indie authors because as Evan just kind of highlighted in a really nice, eloquent way, you have a team on your side if you go trad. if you go indie, you are building your team and you are kind of doing it all yourself. And the end result, the end product is 100% on your shoulders in a way that I can already feel not being there with my trad book, because I just had someone tell me it needs to be rewritten from first to third. And now it's like, oh, okay, this is changing in some substantial ways. But it's a double-edged sword, right? There's ways that both can get under your skin and there's ways that both can fail you. Again, indie, if you're not competent at 1,000 different small little skills you're gonna have to pick up, hope things can go terribly wrong to the point where, you know, you choose a cover artist who doesn't reflect your material well because you didn't understand the difference between art you like and art that'll find your market. That's all on you. And so the people who do find success in indie, I think it is genuinely more impressive than finding success in trad, because that is, you have a team, you have a marketing budget, you have all that stuff. But at the same time, anyone who says that indie does not have more rough, I disagree. The indie space is the Wild West, and that's how it's kind of thrives. I think that's why a lot of the biggest deals you see from trad right now are people who found success in the indie space who would have never been published before. They found their own hype. There's Dungeon Crawler Carl is now getting this great deal and it's blowing up and it so deserves it. And Matt Dinneman gets this go, and I did that. That's amazing. Like that's a story worth a movie. But I don't know. That's just, I think both are right and wrong for different people for different reasons.
Yeah, I mean, to piggyback off of what Daniel's saying, I agree 100%. You know, there's so many variables, there's so many different lives people lead and things that people would consider success and, you know, not success and stuff. I will say personally, from just a fan of fantasy books and sci-fi and horror and stuff and genre fiction in general, I've read some boring ass traditional books where I didn't even want to talk about them on the internet. And then I've read some indie, like Sword of Kaigan. You've got it sitting on the shelf right behind you.
Oh, one of my favorite books ever. Yep.
Yeah. Love it. Mage Errant is really cool. Like, I mean, like I've read a bunch of indie stuff that I'm like, damn, like this is killer. Like this is really, really good. Yeah. I mean, like maybe there's like a spelling error that maybe would have got fixed, or you know, they like to use the same word too many times in a paragraph or a page or whatever. It's like just small stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I've definitely read some trad published books where I'm like, whose parents were connected to someone? Because like, no, absolutely not. Like this is
Evan.
Like
you can just say it's Brandon Sanderson. We all know.
I'm not starting beef with Brandon fucking Sanderson. I
raised
like Sanderson.
An
Don't
eyebrow
try, Daniel,
too many times.
Cutting this off. I love Sanderson. There it is.
Well, on Evan, you
I know.
You were talking about a point in your own writing, and that it's a pattern that I've seen with indie published books is often the biggest problem is setting the scene and being able to actually picture where you are and going like, wait, is that person on the other side of the room? And is it daytime now? Is it night? I have found that has been one of the biggest hurdles through the indie books that I don't think really pass mustard. That's their biggest problem. It's just something that an editor really could help on of, I don't know what's going on. And where the positive is, hey, this is a really cool concept that I really wouldn't see in a trad book, but I'm just kind of confused. You need an editor to look at this because is it daytime? Is it nighttime? How many years have passed between paragraphs 3 and 5?
Which,
I don't know.
I think Daniel, and when you were talking with Sanderson about, I think you were talking about him with AI and the pros and cons, or I think that was with him.
Oh, no.
But you mentioned one of the pros of AI was that it could help indie authors, and they could utilize AI in a way. Oh, sorry, are we losing Daniel? I think.
Oh, I'm back.
Okay, we got you back.
So sorry.
I talk AI and then it starts getting all fizzy. That's just very coincidental, I swear. So, but yeah, you were talking about how AI, some of the pros of that can be indie authors who don't have the resources of traditionally published can then use some editing softwares or something like that, which I didn't really think about because there's this big kind of connotation about AI, but there's some positives where maybe indie authors can use some tools that they wouldn't have access to before. Are there any tools that either of you know of that could be anything that an indie author would like? Is there an editing tool out there? Do you guys use certain kind of organizational things on your computers? Like I know Scrivener is a big one. Or
a platform that helps you connect with the exact team of people you kind of need as an indie publisher?
I last my audio was in, I heard we were talking about I heard like it was night outside, I didn't know, and then it cut out, and then it cut back in, and it was like, so AI. And I'm really confused, but I'll try my best to answer the question.
Are there any tools that people, that independent authors can use for like, programs, applications, AI software, stuff like that?
I will take that if you will allow me.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Sweet. You already said, I think ChatGPT was mentioned in there. Yeah, I have no problem with people using ChatGPT for basic, just is this grammar right kind of stuff, because that stuff you previously would just Google, and now you're basically using ChatGPT to do it faster and more efficiently. And if that helps your creative flow, I don't care. But I think if you are going to expect ChatGPT to do as good a job as a real human editor with a resume is going to do, you will be sadly mistaken, because that software is not going to understand how to maintain your personality as a writer or enhance it and those type of things. You know, it'll probably do okay line edits, but nothing beyond that. Beyond that, though, I would say there are a jillion job websites that just are like gigs for hire, and there are so many affordable and talented editors that will go beyond just a simple line edit and give you real developmental stuff that that's where you probably should go. And I'm surprised a number of people don't know that kind of stuff exists. You can go to, not Fiverr, I'm blanking on the name of Kayla, where Kayla hired hers from. And then also, there are so many networking groups that I have learned about through my time doing independent publishing that you need to get into, not only because they'll be filled with great advice, but they'll help you make connections to actually maybe find someone who will be able to connect you with someone to get you the dream editor, or the person, they know the person who you really want to do your audiobook. I hate to say this. You also at this point need to look into, if you're an indie person, how you want to publish it, exclusively Amazon, exclusively not. There are YouTube videos that are very, very good. I've considered making one of my own that will explicitly show you how you can make the most profit as someone just trying to start publishing. And that is, you got to watch one of those. You need to understand the publishing process, because you can end up signing the rights away in a way you don't want. And if you try to leave those contracts, you'll be severely penalized. And I would also say you need to use those same tools to understand how you'll get pushed better in the algorithms with certain exclusivity stuff. I would say if you have an audience, try not to go exclusive, so that way your full audience can experience what you've written. But if you don't have an audience and you just need to survive in those algorithms, you probably do end up going exclusive, because you'll get more promoted on one platform. Sorry, I think I've kind of gone off the tangent here, but those are the tools that immediately come to my mind that are a little more outside of the artsy side of it and a little more in the technical side.
Bizet, for people that don't know, that exclusive with Audible or not, you get higher percentages. Is that correct? And there's a lot to it.
You get somewhat comparably better percentages if you go exclusive.
Yeah.
I don't even really say they would be completely fair percentages, yeah, but it's better than not. But it's better than if you went non-exclusive. Then also along with that is the you get promoted on Amazon's platform. They'll actually push your book. If you don't, then marketing.
And that's
on
not
you.
Even mentioning like their Kindle environment is like what, 80%? It's between like 60-80% of the Kindle stuff. So if you don't, even beyond going exclusive, if you don't go their full Kindle Unlimited package where people like get percentage by, you know, how much they read your book, that gives you more money. Like they are chokeholding basically, I hate to say it, it sounds evil because I don't support it, but they basically have made it so if you have no audience, no leg up, and you're an indie author trying to publish, it's almost stupid not to go fully exclusive with them. I'm not saying I endorse it. I'm saying they have succeeded in making that the current situation we're in.
Got it. Because when it comes to that money side of publishing, I had one stat here. I can finally throw it in. It's relevant. Okay. Here's the stat.
You can actually use your research.
Okay. Here we go. Let me cook. Okay. So most self-published books sell fewer than 100 copies. Not surprising. I mean, it's very hard to sell. Many sell fewer than 10, but 10,000 books is a success even for a professionally published book. Now, according to Publishers Weekly, an average book published by a professional publisher sells roughly 3,000 copies over its lifetime. So even if you get traditionally published, it's not guaranteed that you're going to sell Uber books. And there's a diagram in one of your videos, Daniel, where you're talking about how in traditionally published books. There's a bunch of authors who don't sell a ton. I mean, you're just not guaranteed to get a bunch. There's your middle ground where they send thousands. And then there's the top of the pyramid, the millions sold, and your big names in the publishing game. Just getting a little bit of insight into the background sales of it. Evan, to start with you real quick, and don't divulge any numbers, stuff like that. But when it comes to getting a traditionally published book, is there a sort of upfront payment they always give you? Does it depend after the series goes? Because yours was a signed trilogy. Do you mind giving without obviously details that are compromising your integrity of how that all works?
So Tor offered me a certain amount of money that they're giving to me in like chunks, so they don't just like back up a truck full of money to my house and you know, say, hey, hopefully this book's come out at some point.
A financial advisor.
So you know, they give it to me in chunks, and you know, so I got some when I signed my contract, I get some when I turn the first book in, I get some when the first book comes out. With mine, we're doing straight to trade paperback. We're not doing hardcover. I think we might do like a special edition hardcover if we sell a lot and people really like the book and want hardcover editions, we can maybe do something like that. But typically like a typical traditional deal, you'll get to make it really simple, say you got $50,000 for one book, right? They would split that $50,000 into four different payments. So you'd get a quarter of it when you first signed, a quarter of it when you turned in for copy editing, a quarter when for like hardcover, and then a quarter of it for paperback, basically. Okay. You know, as it comes out. I mean, I'm stoked that I didn't just get like a big lump sum of money, because I don't know what I would have done. I would have just like ran away with it. Like I can't like
Andre steal some money.
Yeah, no, seriously. I would have been like, hopefully the first one sells. I live in Iceland and I threw my phone in the ocean. So, that's kind of typically how at least to my knowledge, how traditional publishing goes. But you know, lots of different deals out there, lots of different ways that publishers do things. There's like imprints that are much smaller that aren't part of the big five. Probably handle things a little bit differently, but that's at least kind of how mine went.
Yeah, Daniel. Oh yeah, you want to jump in on that? Go ahead.
Sorry, did you cover the percentage that goes up after a certain number of sales? Or
So that's in my contract. I haven't really looked at it yet because I'm still like
months. I feel like it's common.
Yeah. Like I'm still 9 months away from release, which feels like a really long time. But also that's gonna come up pretty quick, actually. I think that I get a bonus if I earn out. And for anybody listening who doesn't know what earning out is, it's basically like if I sell enough books that'll cover the advance in whole, you know, for that particular book, then I'll start making royalties off of that. But I also get a bonus if I earn out, which is really nice. And then I think after a certain amount sold, I go from like, I don't know, it's like $1 a book to like $1.75 a book or something like that. So, I mean, it's really cool because, like, if it sells, like, a million copies, then I will move to Iceland and throw my phone in the ocean. But, like,
sorry to clarify that. So you get royalties regardless, but it goes up if you sell a certain amount? Did I understand
you only
that
get royalties after it's earned out. So after if I only sell, like, 100 books, then I won't have earned out, which it doesn't mean I have to pay anything back, but I'm not going to be making money off of that book. And Tor probably wouldn't work with me again. I mean, they might, but like we have good conversations. They like me. Nice. But if I'm not making them money, then probably. Which leads me to another thing I was going to say is as much as I feel like I've had a very good experience with trad publishing so far. I've heard horror stories about it. I feel like I've been extremely lucky. And I'm also not going to sit here and say my audience that I built over a couple of years like didn't have anything to do with it. Like that's literally why it happened. So just to clear that up, it's because I had an audience that I was able to get my agent. And now the book is solid, you know, solid enough for someone to put money up for it. But also, all of that being said, that I've had a good experience with trad publishing, I still would be pretty down to self-publish too. I mean, and I know that there are some trad authors that do self-publish like on the side, and I've just got like some stuff that it's like I don't even know if I really like want to like throw it, like kick it to an agent and publisher. I kind of just want to like get it up and like just get it done and get it out and have it be the exact way that I envisioned it. And I don't know. I kind of just want to mess with that. And I think I can too. I think, I don't know how that really, I haven't talked to Tor about it really, or my agent. But I think that self-pubbing is still like, it's not off the table for me. I still like the idea of it. I think that learning how to like get the margins right and learning how to like get the pages set up correctly. Like where does the chapter begin on what height on the page, you know, like stuff like that. Like I'm really into that kind of granular stuff. Maybe doing a cover myself, you know, doing the art that I want to do, like personally. It wouldn't be,
it'll be like the episode of Malcolm in the Middle where Hal's painting his garage.
It would not be very good at all. But you know, just, having that kind of creative freedom is still very alluring to me. I mean, I'm not saying I don't have creative freedom with Tor, but like Daniel said earlier, I mean, it is like a very, you can be unfiltered with it. You know, like there's probably things I could dig into, and like even little novellas where I'm like, okay, this one's going to be like super fucked up, you know? And it's like a Tor Nightfire might not want to pick that up and sell it, but, and which is totally cool. But there, I'm not going to like limit my writing to like what I think Tor can sell or what I think, Del Rey could sell or whatever, you know?
Well, now that we're talking about both of these kind of industries, both Daniel, especially you have, I guess, a bit more hands in both sides of it.
Yeah.
How do both of you see indie publishing affecting traditional publishing? Because I think especially now it's indie publishing has definitely grown a little bit in these recent years.
It's certainly symbiotic. I mean, people think they're somehow competing against each other, which in some ways they are. They all want to make the sales, but Trad is making a bunch of money from signing successful indie people. It's a way for them to know this is a success and we will make money off of it. So they love when they see an indie darling that they can hand six figures to then make seven off of. And that indie author loves getting handed those six figure checks, obviously. And then, you know, a lot of times once you get in that Trad space, it's a lot easier to get film stuff done. I mean, there's a reason, you know, Will White has had an incredible success with his series, but there's a reason he's still taking it to Kickstarter right now and doing that's crowdfunded, as opposed to someone who, you know, through Tor got noticed. They get, you know, a script bought from Hollywood. And by the way, just because the script gets bought, there's like a 1 in 100 chance that actually is going to get adapted. People need to people get so excited when it's like, oh, this book's rights got purchased and it's going to sit for 5 years. Look what happened to Wheel of Time. That is
look what happened
normal.
To Wheel of Time.
Yeah. I mean what I said. It's that docile for like 3 decades before it even had what we're getting.
Wow.
And it was for a criminally low amount of money. Robert Jordan referred to his first, I'm not going to get into too deep of stuff because I don't have the details in front of me. I don't get anything wrong. But he basically talked about the first people to buy his film rights as drinking pissy soup. So, yeah, it's a
pissy
it's a
soup.
Rough, huh. Yeah. I did a whole video on it. It's worth checking out. There's a history to it. I did not for that video. I got one for a different one. So I know I was right about everything I said in that video. I was right about everything in the other one, too. Sorry, what was the question again? I just went down this path.
How is indie publishing affecting traditional publishing? And you're talking about how, you know, as soon as indie publisher gets successful, that's when the traditional publisher picks them up.
Yeah, you know. An indie published author finding their own success, getting picked up by Trad, will have already been able to come to the table to get a much better deal than they would have had otherwise. So it does benefit them. But on top of that, Trad is then going to be able to open a ton more doors for them, like potential film deals, stuff like that, because of their already existing long going relationships. I can't think, correct me if I'm wrong, I could be, but I can't think of an indie published series that has had a major Hollywood adaptation.
None come to my mind.
No. Yeah, nothing's
coming to until mind. They've gotten a Trad deal. Obviously, there was 50 Shades of Grey was an indie hit for sure, but it got its Trad deal and then it was adapted. Don't know why my mind went to that one first. There are many other examples.
We can dig into it if you want.
Will White's animation, like I saw it on Kickstarter. It's great. Like, I was so impressed with it. And I really hope they actually do get to go forward with that.
But that's strategic. He's trying to get that enough hype, enough success that someone in Hollywood will go, wow, well, let's abandon these traditional ways of getting things adapted and let's hit up this indie guy, because then he won't have to split profits in ways that he Will White is making. There's a reason he's going the way he's going. He is very well set up and he is fine.
He is a smart publisher. Yeah. He knows how to play the game. As far as indie publishers, if you want to talk about like just who has the formula down on how to navigate indie publishing, Will White, by far.
He is setting such an incredible example for people to follow, and I hope he continues to do what he's doing because he's making more people respect indie publishing. The guy is a champion.
Yeah, I mean, look at stuff like Zodiac Academy, or like, you know, Ruby Dixon's stuff. Katie Robert, I think, is also pretty. A lot of her books are independent. So like, you know, romance and romanticy, monster romance type stuff. Like, you know, there's series that have 14, 15, 20 books in them, and they all got like 3,000 or 4,000 like ratings on Goodreads or Amazon, and they've got a decent Instagram presence or a decent TikTok presence, and there's like buzz going. And so one of the really cool things about indie publishing is that you get to keep more of your money. And also, if you can carve out, you don't need to become Rebecca Yarros, you don't need to become Sarah J. Maas, you don't need to become Brandon Sanderson, carve out an audience. If you can sell 4,000 or 5,000 books, you know, it is a tall order, but like, I mean, if you've got 20 books out and you're selling, you know, 1,000 of them, Evan, each one of them a year.
This is America. If you're not number one, if you ain't first, you last, buddy.
I'm just saying, like,
if you're not
like,
growing, you're dying.
To your question, though, it's like, I feel like the industry is changing in a way where there's more noise, but there's also more avenues too, you know? So every time I look on, you know, Kindle Unlimited or Audible or something, I'm like, oh my God. Like, I just became friends with Andy Paloquin. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. But he was like, hey, how's your book stuff going? And I was like, oh man, it's great. It's like my first book. So it's, you know, there's a lot going on with me mentally right now. And he's like, oh yeah, it's okay. I've done like 50. So you'll be fine eventually. And I was like, dude, you've written 50 fucking books? Are you kidding me? Like, and I looked on his page and it was just like series after series after series, and it's like 12 books, 8 books, 9 books for each one of these series. And they all have like hundreds of ratings on them. And it's just like, fuck yeah, man. Or like Miles Cameron, he's doing like, he does all kinds of series and all kinds of things out. And it's like, if you went up to like a random person on the street and you're like, hey, have you read like Traitor's Son, like Miles Cameron stuff? They'd be like, no, I don't know who the fuck that is. But Miles Cameron has his audience, you know, Sebastian de Castell has his audience, you know? And so, you know, I'm not saying like, don't shoot high. Like I shot high and I got there, you know, and that's really amazing. But like, also the work comes first, like tell the stories, you know, like you can get there. Just make sure that you're also like, you don't want to get too in the weeds of like, oh, well, like, if I, you know, don't write to like this market, I'm not going to get like this publisher or like this agent. And it's like, that's valid, but like also write what you want to write and avenues will present themselves, you know, like just keep writing your books. Don't get stuck in the mire of like, how am I going to become a millionaire? You know,
completely agree. You want to create what you created and then find the person who you think will help you get it where it needs to go. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Write your ass off. Write more than you think you are. You write more than you think you need to. Write all the fucking time. Break up with your girlfriend.
That could be. You know what? We won't mention what happened off camera. We're gonna stick together. Okay.
We're gonna keep our word.
we're gonna keep our word. Right. That I would love to end off that. Then with a little putting you both on the spot for, you know, you probably get this all the time. Authors get this all the time. But would you each have some great writing advice for people out there? We've heard show don't tell. We've heard things. Is there something from your unique experiences writing that you found, this is what my struggle was, this is how I got over it?
And specifically, Daniel, you're going to have to do double duty.
Oh.
Want advice for you on what's best advice on trad publishing when you're writing for that purpose, and what is your best advice when you're writing specifically for indie publishing?
Okay, if I
have MLA format.
Evan, you could get away
you
with
go
one.
First.
Okay. Yeah, read. Read everything. Like, don't just read fantasy. Fantasy's great. Read horror. Read biographies. Read historical fiction. Read everything you can. Anything that sounds even remotely interesting to you, read it. Read Monster Romance. I'm reading Morning Glory Milking Farm right now.
What?
Which is
what?
Oh, you want me to tell you about it?
Yeah.
So it's about this young woman.
I'm trying so hard to think of an answer, and I just heard Morning Glory Milking Farm.
And I'm so happy to be advertising this wonderful book.
Please share,
everybody. So basically, in this world, there are lots of I don't know, like hybrid creature type, some like fantasy creatures and stuff. There's like moth people, and there's like owl people or something. But the main thing to take away from this is that there are minotaurs. Okay, so this young woman is kind of hard on her luck. You know, she's having trouble paying rent. She got like this degree, but it's not really doing anything for her. And she's just like, I need to make money. So she goes and gets a job at this very quaint farm. Who they jerk off minotaurs into little milk bottles, and then they use the minotaur semen in pills to make human dicks harder.
That's been another Tudor Ramble episode.
I'm having a great time. What I'm saying is read everything, man. Like, don't turn yourself off to anything. Like, there are so many fucking amazing stories.
This is the best writing advice
I've
ever.
You don't need to just read fantasy. You could read all kinds of different things. Don't turn yourself off to romance. Don't turn yourself off to YA dystopia. Don't turn yourself off to horror. Don't turn yourself off to splatterpunk.
Yeah.
You know, unless I mean, like, obviously check content warnings and stuff, but read.
That's
all
actually,
the time.
That's actually great advice.
Yeah.
Other than the minotaur sperm, great advice.
I mean, it depends on who you are, man, because I'm having a blast.
Is it sad it seems up my alley?
You can't talk about sperm and then say I'm having a blast.
I just did, Daniel. I just did. I'd like to see you try to stop me. But yeah, then one other thing to just kind of tack onto that too is I know it's so like cliche, but it really is like just don't stop. For the love of fuck, don't stop writing. Like, just I know it sucks. I just watched an interview with Kurt Vonnegut. There's like Charlie Rose or something, and the interviewer was like, oh, so like you must really love this. And Kurt Vonnegut was like, no, I don't. I actually don't particularly like writing at all. It's like, it's a lot of work. It's not fun to like look at your own ineptitude, like look at how bad you are at something, have it staring you right in the face. It's uncomfortable. But I promise you, like, you can fix stuff. You can make it better. Like, just please trust me when I tell you. Angie Kills a King was a hot, dried, dog shit dumpster fire book. It was so bad. And it stayed bad for like a while. But I kept carving away at it. And eventually it was like, oh, there it is. Like, cool. I can see this in my head now. And now I can start refining it. Now I can start having fun with it and start being like, oh, you know what would be cool is if I like threw this part in like the very beginning because it totally ties up with this thing at the end. And like, that's where the fun stuff happens. But you have to get through the doldrums. You have to get past the honeymoon phase. And you have to like don't put it on a pedestal. Like, don't make it this big thing that's like, oh, I will write a book and I will be a writer. Like, just have fun with it. Tell the story that you feel like isn't being told. And if it doesn't look the way that you want it to, remember, a lot of these books that you've read have been through editors, they've been through beta readers, they've been through copy editors, they've been through developmental editors, they've been through agents, they've been through a bunch of people that are trying to make it as polished as it can possibly be. So when you're sitting there at your computer at 2 a.m. and you just had a really good idea, just because it doesn't look like those trad published books that are refined and have been combed over for years to be a good finished product doesn't mean that what you're working on won't eventually be a good finished product. Just stick with it.
Bravo. Good luck, Daniel.
Well, Daniel, I'm going to take away your advice that you already have in your head right now. And no, using a typewriter in a cafe is not your best advice.
No.
You can do it.
Come up with something else.
No, I was going to say the number one thing I'm going to tell indie people is if you're listening to this podcast and you're needing this advice, it's your first time putting out an indie book, right? And writing a book, as Evan just so nicely highlighted, is a Herculean task. Even a novella is going to take far more effort than you think. And if it's suddenly you're done, you're like, that was easy. You did something wrong. It's not that simple. I don't know what kind of cafe you're sitting in, but you need to get out and go to a different one and look at what you did, because it's probably a crime against literature, because your first draft's going to be bad. But that's something I think a lot of people lose, is they fail to maintain perspective. I know so many people, my beautiful girlfriend included, who will go, oh, this isn't perfect. And I'm like, it's draft one. There's a reason. There's a thing called draft five a lot of the time. It's really easy to get down on yourself. It is so easy to get in your own head and just know that every other author has felt exactly what you're feeling. And I mean this in the nicest way possible. You're not a unique little butterfly. The creative process has emotional stages we've all felt, and everyone else has gotten through them. Not true, but everyone has pushed through to a point that you look up to, right? That you want to be like. And so you got to push through too, and be willing to come back at a second draft. And what I'm really happy to say is, when your first draft is done, changes to the second draft are easier to do than you might think. And, you know, there's also this really, like, BookTube is bad about encouraging this too, like, really honed in view of what a draft one is. People are like, you go from beginning to end and that's your draft one. God, no. You do drafters 1 through 8 three times. It's on draft 3. Then you move on to here and do one draft. Then the next chunk is 2 drafted through. Whatever works, do it, because every other author that agents are getting books from is watching the same videos you are and obeying the same advice. And so it's going to be similar. Watch those videos, learn from them. That's great. But then let yourself go a little wild and crazy, because that's the stuff you want to read, right? You want to read the stuff where the author kind of went a little nuts and just risked some shit. Excuse my language. So that's what you should do.
Wow. Both great advice. And we will leave it with all the links to their books and channels in the description if you don't know about them. But you do.
No, you got to say who did better.
Daniel get away with not giving 2-piece of advice.
It's what I
that
saw.
That was for indie authors. He didn't give us the one for traditional authors.
Typewriter was his other advice.
No. Yeah. I have genuine for trad.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Evan earlier said something I disagree with. And this is going to be my advice for trad. And I'm just going to say, you do need thick skin, because you're going to get feedback every now and then that's going to hurt. And you're going to need to just let that roll off those shoulders and be like, that's fine.
The feeling of sadness after the rejection is valid, is what I was saying. Like, you don't necessarily, like, you can sit with it. It's okay. Like, it's.
I've sat outside and stared at the stars sometimes, because I know there's going to be a lot of work to do, and it hurts.
Evan heard predictable. What was the worst thing someone said about your book, Daniel? Or any of them?
Easily, this needs to be third person. Oh God!
Yeah,
that was a nightmare.
After like 50,000 words?
About So that hurt a lot, and that's 50,000 in the document. It's probably 100,000 written and deleted. So that sucked. But hey, I'm done, and it's better because of it.
Well, we thank you both for coming on. All the links will be in the description below. Do you guys want to end with anything? Your book's coming out in the summer, Evan. Daniel, what you'll have updates soon, but Evan, what do you want to leave the people with? And then we'll end it up with Daniel.
Just look out for a pre-order link. It'll be available soon, hopefully. And you'll see that really cool cover, hopefully very soon as well. And let's look out for it in May. And I'll be talking on all of my channels a bunch about it. So you won't miss it.
If you want to be a better writer, read Angie Kills a King. It's the greatest thing ever written. That's my ending advice. Buy Evan's book in hardback, even if it's not doing it. Buy a paper.
Demand hardback.
Make it hard.
Move to Italy and demand it be published there.
Well, that has been another Tutor Ramble episode. Rich, this was a good one. And we'll let Evan go back to writing and Daniel go back to the secret recording people. So we'll see you all later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Wow. while the world whizzes by, enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown and your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah.
All for $6, all just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Hortons. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.